Chapter 11. The Black Sea. Austin strolled along the Bosporus, past the ferry terminal and sleek tour vessels, until the smell of decaying fish told his nostrils he was near the working waterfront. Raucous squadrons of gulls grew more numerous as he approached the ragtag fleet of fishing boats nuzzled up to the dock. With their paint-flaked woodwork and corroded metal, the sea-beaten rust bucket seemed to remain afloat by a miracle of levitation. Austin stopped at one exception, a solid-looking wooden boat that appeared to have undergone heroic maintenance. The black hull and white wheelhouse gleamed with many coats of paint, and the bright work was liberally soaked with oil. Reaching into his pocket, Austin pulled out a folded piece of notepaper and matched the scrawled word Turgot with the name painted in white on the stern. He smiled approvingly. He liked Captain Kemal without having met him. Turgot was a renowned 16th-century admiral in the reign of Suleiman the Magnificent. Anyone who would name an ancient fishing vessel after such a towering naval figure displayed a sense of history and humor. The deck was deserted except for a man in a double-breasted black suit. He sat on a coil of thick rope, mending a net spread across his knees. Austin called out a greeting in Turkish. Merhaba. May I come aboard? The man looked up. Merhaba, he said, and beckoned Austin aboard. Austin climbed a short gangway and stepped onto the deck. The boat was about 50 feet long, with a wide beam to provide stability as a fishing platform. His eyes swept the Turgot, taking in the extraordinary efforts that had been made to maintain a vessel that looked as if it went back to the Ottoman Empire itself. He went over to the seated man and said, I'm looking for Captain Kemal. I'm Kemal, the man said. His fingers flew over the mesh without missing a loop. The captain was a slightly built man in his 50s. His face was narrow, his olive skin burnished to a reddish glow by sun and wind. He wore a woven skull cap over dark brown hair going to gray, and he was clean-shaven except for a toothbrush mustache that seemed to be held in place by the curve of his prominent nose. The soft wail of Turkish music came from a portable radio at his feet. My name is Kurt Austin. I'm with the National Underwater and Marine Agency. I was on the Numa ship Argo when we found your cousin Mehmet's body. Kemal nodded solemnly and put the net aside. Mehmet's funeral was this morning, he said, in well-spoken English. He plucked at his sleeve to show that he was wearing his best and only suit. They told me on the Argo. I hope I'm not intruding by coming by so soon. The captain shook his head and indicated a nearby, waist-high stack of netting. Sit, please, Mr. Austin. You speak English very well. Thank you. When I was younger, I worked as a cook for the American airbase near Ankara. He smiled, displaying a brilliant gold tooth. The pay was good. I worked very hard and saved the money to buy this boat. I noticed you named it after a great admiral. Kemal raised a bushy eyebrow, impressed. Turgot was a big hero to my people. I know. I read a biography about him. The captain studied Kurt with deep-set liquid brown eyes. Thank your Numa people for me. It would be very hard for Mehmet's family if they did not have his body to bury. I'll be sure to tell Captain Atwood and the Argo's crew of your appreciation. Miss Dorn mentioned your name. The captain smiled. The beautiful television woman came by last night. She said Mehmet's widow will be well provided for. It will not bring Mehmet back, but it is more than he could have earned in his whole life. He shook his head in wonder. God is great. I called the hotel earlier, and they told me Miss Dorn had checked out. She has gone to Paris. She wants to hire my boat again, but must get permission from her bosses. Austin received the news of Kayla's departure with mixed feelings. He regretted not having had the chance to get to know Kayla better, but the lovely TV reporter would have been a distraction. What else did Miss Dorn say?
She told me what happened to Mehmet.
She said men on horses shot at the TV people and killed my cousin.
He frowned.
They are very bad men. Mehmet never hurt anyone.
Yes, they are. Very bad men.
She told me how you shot at them with your little plane. How many did you kill?
I'm not sure. There was one body.
Good. Do you know who these people are who killed him?
No, but I intend to find out.
Kemal raised his eyebrows. You are going back to that place?
If I can find a boat to take me there.
But you have the big Numa ship.
It wouldn't be a good idea to use a government vessel.
Austin glanced around at the tourgate. I need something that won't attract attention. The light of understanding dawned in the dark eyes.
Something like a fishing boat, maybe.
Austin smiled.
Yes,
something very much like a fishing boat.
The captain studied Austin's face, then got up and went into the wheelhouse. He reappeared with a large bottle and two chipped coffee mugs. He uncorked the bottle, poured liberal quantities into the mugs, and handed one to Austin.
To Mehmet, he said, raising his drink high in toast.
They clinked the mugs, and Kemal took a generous swallow, gulping the strong drink down as if it were water. Austin knew from the licorice smell that the mug held the potent Turkish firewater known as Raki. Although he did not ordinarily drink alcohol before the sun appeared over the yardarm, he didn't want to be impolite. He took a tentative sip and let the fiery liquor trickle down his throat, thinking that this is what it must be like to swallow broken glass. Kemal took another healthy swig and, to Austin's relief, set his mug aside. He affixed Austin with a leveled gaze.
Why would you want to go back there? You could be shot, too.
That's a possibility, but it wouldn't have to happen.
Last time we had no warning or weapons. This time we will.
Kemal pondered the answer. Austin was glad to see that the captain was not someone who made rash decisions. His coolness could come in handy.
The Turk stared into his cup. I feel responsible for Mehmet. I let him go with the TV people so he could make some extra money.
No one could have predicted he would be shot.
Of course, you are right. I fished there many times with no trouble.
Would you ever go back?
Not for pay,
no.
Austin was disappointed, but not surprised.
I understand, Captain. It could be very dangerous, no matter how well prepared we are.
Fah!
Kemal spat off to his side. I am not afraid. I said I would not go there for pay. I owe you a favor for killing that pig.
He dismissed Austin's protest with a wave of his hand. The tourgate is at your disposal, he said, as grandly as if he were turning over the wheel of the QE2.
You're not obligated to me in any way.
The captain thrust his chin forward. Speaking in measured tones to make sure there was no mistaking his intentions, he said,
The men who killed my cousin are the ones who must be made to pay.
I am not a stranger to these affairs. As a young man, I was a smuggler. I was never caught.
He thumped the deck with his heel and flashed his 14-carat grin. Twin diesels, he said proudly. 30 knots cruising speed.
When do you wish to go?
I'm expecting 3 other people from the United States today. I have to round up some equipment as well. How about tomorrow morning? The boat will be fueled up and ready at dawn.
What about crew? Austin said. I don't want to place anyone in danger after what happened to Mehmet.
Thank you. I will keep 2 crewmen, my most trusted. I will warn them about the danger so they can make a choice. I know what they will say. They are cousins to Mehmet, too.
They shook hands on the deal. Austin said he would be there with the sun. He left before Kamal wanted to seal the agreement with another cup of Rocky. His head was spinning on the walk back to the Argo, though by the time he returned to the Numa ship, the fresh air off the Bosporus had cleared away most of the alcoholic vapors. He went up to the bridge to see Captain Atwood, who was poring over some charts.
"How's the television star?" he asked.
"You've obviously heard about what a natural I am before the cameras," Atwood replied.
"Okay.
I admit it," he said with a sheepish grin. "I had a good time filming with those crazy characters. My guess is that they'll edit out my pretty mug in favor of the lovely Miss Dorn."
"Would you blame them?"
"Hell no, not in 100 years.
I'm surprised you didn't make a move on the lady. Losing your touch?"
"My heart belongs only to Numa," Austin said, placing his hand on his chest. "Which brings up why I'm here. I'm going to need some help. No questions asked." The captain cocked his head. He had known Austin a long time and never knew the man to leave business of any sort unfinished.
"We'll do what we can, as long as it doesn't involve putting the Argo or its crew in jeopardy."
"It won't. All I need is the loan of some gear." Austin summarized his wish list and asked that the equipment be delivered to the Turgut. "None of it would be a problem," the captain said. While Atwood ordered up the requested gear, Austin went to his cabin and plugged in his laptop computer. He called up a commercial satellite imaging company off the internet and requested photos of a location on the Russian coast of the Black Sea. He examined the photos closely, but wasn't surprised when nothing unusual popped out at him. The Soviets would not be advertising their secret base. He punched out a number on his Global Star phone. It was still early back in the States, but he knew from his days of working with the CIA that Sam Leahy would be in his office. "How's the weather at Langley?" Austin said when Leahy's brass-lunged voice came on the phone. There was a pause.
"You got the wrong number, pal. If you're looking for a goddamn weather report, call the National Underwater and Marine Agency. Hell, I hear the smart Alex and Newman know everything there is to know."
"Almost everything, Sam. That's why I'm calling for your help."
"I knew you'd come crawling back to the company. Great hearing from you. How have you been, you old sea dog?"
"I'm fine. They still have you tied to a desk?"
"Not for long. Retirement is in 6 months. Then it's running fishing charters in the Chesapeake. I could use a first mate if you ever get tired of the Washington rat race."
"Sounds tempting. Put me down for a charter at the very least. Right now, I could use some information. What do you know about Soviet sub-bases?"
"Broad subject. Anything in particular you'd like to know?"
"Yes. How were they physically constructed?"
"To begin with, they were big. They had to be large enough to accommodate the babies like the Typhoon, with a length of 557 feet. The beam alone was 75 feet. Those monsters were armed with 20 nukes apiece. The Soviets wanted them protected from a nuclear attack, so they built the pens deep. They learned from the German U-boat pen construction that held up pretty well under Allied bombing. Basically, they'd blast a tunnel out of a hillside and line it with several yards of reinforced granite."
"Do you have any data on the where and how of these bases?"
"I can get it."
Austin heard an unspoken conditional in the answer.
"It would really be a help if you could dig out what you can."
"No problem. Lots of that stuff has been declassified anyhow. But I'll hold you to that promise to do a charter." Austin was relieved. He'd expected Leahy to say he would have to run the request through his higher-ups. You provide the bait, and I'll bring the beer. Austin gave Leahy his email address, thanked him again, and hung up. He worked out some logistical problems on his computer, then he went out to check on the preparations for his trip with Captain Kamal. The equipment he'd asked for was stacked in boxes on the deck and ready to go. A truck was on its way to run the equipment to the Turgut. Austin had done all he could until he heard from the special assignments team. He didn't have to wait long. As he was taking an equipment inventory, his phone buzzed. It was Joe Zavala calling. We're at the airport, Zavala said. What took you so long? Zavala sighed loudly. That's gratitude for you. You yanked me out of the arms of the most beautiful woman on the planet. Every woman you've ever been involved with was the most beautiful woman on the planet. What can I say? I am a fortunate man. One day you'll thank me for rescuing you from the bonds of matrimony. Matrimony? A sobering thought. Don't even joke about it. We can talk about your love life later. How soon will you be at the Argo? Gamay is nailing down a cab and Paul is humping the luggage out to the curb. We'll be there sooner than you can spell Constantinople. Within the hour, Zavala and the Trouts arrived at the hotel. After a brief reunion, Zavala said, Not that it matters, but we were wondering if you could give us a hint why we raced halfway across the world at warp speed. I missed your smiling faces? Right, Zavala said. That's why you asked me to bring along your shooting iron and my own metal delivery system. I'll admit I had an ulterior motive, but I'm not lying when I say it's good to see you. Austin glanced around at the other members of the special assignments team and grinned with pleasure at their eager expressions. Then he began to outline his plan.